Sometimes you're reading a DC comic book and you're like, I want this to be animated. Well, luckily, we have the list of the top 5 DC animated original movies because this Geek History Lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Animated Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or animated movie from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour, or on weeks like this, we make a list.
Yes. This week we are going to celebrate the original DC animated movies. This was an initiative that was started way back in 2007, and for every year since then, for over 10 years, they've given us 2 to 3 to sometimes 4 movies that are direct-to-disc, direct-to-digital, animated movies that are awesome. Most of them are pretty good. And to be honest with you, I'm going to say, as a comic book fan, I'm excited that we get to tell some stories that are off the beaten path that you normally wouldn't tell.
Yes.
Ashley, you look like you walked into the wrong podcast. What's going on here?
You kicked me under the table and it's thrown me horrifically.
Oh, I apologize. Okay. You're like, I got a deer in the headlights look and I was like, does Ashley think we're recording like the Frasier podcast? What is going on here?
You know what? Yeah, maybe that'll be our April Fool's episode and people will also think there's more than one episode of that. Who knows?
Ashley, talk about the DC original animated movies. What are your thoughts on these?
I love them. I think they're super, super great. I think they are one of the things that really separates DC from Marvel. I think they're something that DC and Warner Brothers does that's very special.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my favorite versions of these stories are told here. And I also think some of the original stories that they've created over the last decade and change have been really, really awesome.
Now, just to clarify, our list is specifically only going to tie into the DC Animated Original Movies Initiative. The DC Showcase little shorts are not counted in
this.
They're
so good, though.
The Mask of the Phantasm is not counted in this. Return of the Joker is not counted. Most of the Bruce Timm DC Animated Universe, which they did little side direct movies, not counted. So yep. Mystery of the Batwoman's not in this. Sub-Zero is not in this. And they did a Superman movie. It was called like Brainiac Attacks or something like that.
Yeah.
Not in this. So these are only those DC original ones. My list said that there are 28 of them, but I know that's wrong.
Cool. I don't know how many there are.
I don't know how many there are.
You know what? But if you are a patron and you support us over there at the Geek History Lesson Extra level, we are doing a See It or Skip It where we're going through all the DC animated movies. So if you want our hot takes on anything that is not mentioned or Mask of the Phantasm, that's where you can find those this week.
Yes. Now, we will say that the last one that would have counted for our consideration is Batman Hush.
Yes.
Because it came out at San Diego Comic-Con. Unfortunately, Wonder Woman Bloodlines is not out at the time of this recording, so that is where our list stops. So if you are in the future and you have seen Wonder Woman Bloodlines and you're like, this is the most amazing DC animated movie of all time, why is it in your list? Well,
this is why.
We haven't seen it.
Yeah.
We haven't seen it. That's where our list takes place as of Batman Hush.
And I do want to say, before we get too far into this lesson, that we have some TAs joining our class today.
Cool. Are they animated?
Sure. Let's say yes. These two people requested this episode, so thank you for doing that. We are welcoming Ollie Sutcliffe and Joe Rundle as our TAs today.
Ooh, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome. Get me coffee.
You don't drink coffee.
I know, but get it for me anyway. All right.
Scurrying off.
So, as we always do, there will be spoilers in this list.
Full spoilers.
Full spoilers for any of these movies. So, if, you know, be warned.
Yeah.
Also, this is not the objective list. This is our favorites.
Personal list.
There is a difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, hold your horses if you're going to come at us on Twitter and be like, this movie is the best. You know, this is our favorite. This is our opinion. Personal choice.
But do feel free to go to GHL Podcast and share your personal list with us.
Actually, I would love to read some of your lists. I love when we do lists and we get to read your list. So please, at GHL Podcast or facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, please give us your top 5 of these 28 or more.
Let's just say 30.
We don't know the number. Okay, cool. We're going to start it off. Ashley, what is your number 5 DC animated original universe movie?
My number 5 DC animated original universe Justice League Unlimited Forever Batman movie is...
No, just Sleeping Unleaded is not a part of that. Your kid is all confused. I know. It's not part of it.
I was just trying to say a bunch of words that were DC related. Is 2009's Wonder Woman.
Ooh.
Which Jason actually showed me for the very first time 4 or 5 years ago.
I think so. Because I think when the Patty Jenkins Wonder Woman movie is going to happen, I was like, they could just adapt this movie.
Yes.
Kerry Russell's Wonder Woman.
That's right. Miss the Americans herself.
She's great.
She's so good in this. So on a mystical land of Themyscira, a proud and fierce warrior race of Amazons have raised a daughter of untold beauty, grace, and strength, Princess Diana. When an army fighter pilot Steve Trevor crash lands on the island, the rebellious and headstrong Diana defies Amazonian law by accompanying Trevor back to civilization, and the description goes on. This is basically a retelling of what most people think of as the classic Diana Prince, Coombe Wonder Woman origin. I say classic because in this version, she is made out of clay. She's not Zeus's daughter, or as is now comic book canon, some combination of the two. I really like this movie. It borrows very heavily from the Bruce Timm animation style, but it is singular and it doesn't quite look like anything else. And I like a lot of the elements of it, with the exception of they give Steve Trevor a couple really unfortunate jokes with the lasso of truth that I think by more modern standards are kind of low hanging fruit. And okay. Right off the bat, I find Steve pretty unlikable until him and Diana actually leave Paradise Island. And Steve is a really wonderful character, so I kind of think the movie does him a disservice. But the movie is called Wonder Woman. It's not called Steve Trevor. So I guess that's fine. This movie also has one of my favorite portrayals of Hippolyta, because Hippolyta here is very much an equal of Diana, but also challenges her. And that's a balance that I like in that character. And this was the first time that a DC movie really explored telling a Wonder Woman story on her own, where she's not, the Justice League doesn't show up in this, Batman doesn't show up in this, Superman doesn't show up in this. There's other things that are higher on my list that include Wonder Woman as members of a team, and I like the way it highlights her story, even if compared to some of the other things that we're going to be covering, it doesn't diverge too much from the comics. It pretty much stays the straight and narrow as what we think of as being Diana's origin story.
Yeah, it's a solid movie.
I like it a lot. Yeah. It's very accessible. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And Wonder Woman is great. So for me, I put it at my number 5 because I think it is a solid Wonder Woman tale.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's my number 5, 2009's Wonder Woman, Jason Inman.
Mm-hmm.
What is your number 5?
Before I get to my number 5, I just want to say something that I forgot to say up top.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when they first announced this initiative, I remember being super excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember because they first announced it as it was going to be adaptations of comic book storylines.
And we've stepped away from that since.
Well, they stepped away from it pretty early. And, you know, because it started with Superman Doomsday, and then they did, like, a New Frontier, and, you know, and Wonder Woman is one of the ones that's not an exact adaptation. It's sort
it's
of like this nebulous
close,
thing.
It's pretty close, though.
But it's not as, like, a specific storyline.
True.
And my number 5 is another one of these that is not a specific storyline. It is Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. Now, this is a good version of Lex Luthor from a parallel Earth, comes to the Justice League's dimension for help to fight their evil counterparts. Now, I know we said that we were not including anything from the Bruce Timm animated universe of the Batman series.
Yeah, Jason, what are you doing? I'm Twitter.
Well, but this isn't part of that universe. But
what?
The secret story of this movie, as you know, is that this was a leftover script from the Justice League animated series. This was supposed to be the movie that was going to bridge the gap between Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. If you remember in the series, that we got 2 seasons where it was just the 7 main Justice League members on that cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then season 3, it became everybody's on the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really explained why. In this movie was supposed to be the explanation of why, because they found alternate opposite versions of themselves in another world. I just think that this is such an interesting idea because the crime syndicate are such a fascinating part of the DC universe. The crime syndicate, of course, are the evil version of the Justice League. And this movie pits our Justice League against the crime syndicate. It makes Lex Luthor a hero. But here's the thing. Because this is a script written by the great the amazing, the astounding Dwayne McDuffie.
Love him.
Because he wrote a bunch of these early DC original universe anime movies. It really does feel like a Justice League episode. It really trucks along. There are a lot of fun Easter eggs. And I remember not being really excited about this one, but it easily, like right out the gate, became one of my favorites. I also think it has, and I'm going to call it right here, the best Justice League theme of any of the themes. Like I do love the opening original theme, but like this Christopher Drake's opening like score for this is like such a Justice League theme to me. And also the opening credits are like showing you the multiple, the infinite Earths, which I think is really cool. But also this movie has some voice casting that you would not typically do. Stephen Baldwin is the voice of Batman. And I remember I heard that casting, I was like, this can never work. He actually does a really good job. Mark Harmon is Superman. He does a really good job. Chris Noth is, is Lex Luthor.
He's great.
He does really good. And then the coup d'etat is James Wood as Owlman. And you know, whatever you think about
him as a person,
his current state of mind or whatever,
he gives a great performance.
Man, I don't care. I've never cared about Owlman. I care about Owlman in this movie and his ending, and the fact that this whole movie hinges on in the opening scene. There's a joke that Batman makes that he considers Flash expendable. And then the final scene of the movie is Batman does everything he can to save the Flash. Genius writing. That's a character arc, people. And I think it's that simple arc that elevates this one above the 30-ish movies we'll have. 30.
That's interesting because I'm obviously have my full list in front of me, and I think all of mine have pretty strong character arcs. And I know that that's something that you and I personally are really attracted
and
to.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying like the rest of mine on the list don't have.
No. I just like I can't see your list.
Sure.
So that strikes me as interesting that that is a common thread through all of these choices.
Yeah, I just think that Crisis on Two Earths is it's just fun. And it really works. And I think the reason it works is because the characterization is so strong. Because there are other Justice League animated movies out there that have that did not make it on my list because I think the characterization is all over the place. You know, because I would say for me, a lot of the reason why some of these movies didn't make it in my top five is because a lot of these movies have those scenes where you're like, why is that happening? Crisis on Two Earths doesn't have a single scene. I think it just it works. Every scene works. And
it's got a lot of really great fights in it too.
Yeah, it's a big action movie. It really is. But it has like just like the Justice League animated series. And I explain like I from what I understand, they didn't really change the script except for like adding a character. They took out a character and they added a character.
Yeah.
And like that's it. And everything else is basically they were like it's basically the same script. And they said that I looked it up. The reason why they made this is one of the original anime movies is because they were getting a little bit behind schedule. And with this one, they were like, we didn't have to write a script. We could just be like, start animating.
Yeah, that's, I guess in comics terms, would be their trunk story.
Yes.
They were like, we have this. We paid for it. We're going to make it.
Let's just make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. What is your thoughts on this movie?
I like this movie a lot, and what I like about it is it does a really good job at balancing the light and dark counterpoints and the light and dark, like the same sides of different coins. And that can always be a fun thought experiment, but there's a story reason for it, and that's really fun.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Crisis on Two Earths came out in 2010. I should have. I put it in the years for all mine. If you didn't, no worries.
I did too, yeah.
All right, cool. All right, well, Ashley, what is your number four?
My number four is a pretty recent movie that you and I put off watching for a while because we're like, this can't possibly be good. And then it was so good. And then we bought all of the action figures.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's Justice League, God and Monsters from 2015. In an alternate history, Zod is Superman's father. Batman is a vampiric man-bat, also voiced by Ponyboy. And Wonder Woman is the child of Ares, God of War. When these dark heroes form an alliance, the question everyone asks is, will they save the world or rule it? I want this movie to be a live action movie so bad. I think it would be.
I don't think they'll ever do it, but I understand your point.
So great. And the fact that it came out in 2015, I think some of the things that it addresses thematically could be really, really impactful now. So not only is Zod Superman's family, but Superman's pod lands in
Mexico.
A migrant worker's field, and then his family, I think, immigrates to the United States illegally.
Yes, they do.
And what that means for him. Wonder Woman is not only the child of Ares, but she's very tied up with the fourth world. Like, there's scarier, bigger, more challenging ideas of who these archetypical characters are.
Can I interrupt with a comic suggestion here? DC did tie-in comics, digital tie-in comics, to this movie that tell the origin stories of each of these characters.
I'll slap those into our recommended.
And the Zod one is all about his Mexican family. It is great. Mm-hmm. It's such a good comic book. So, okay, there.
I just love how this challenges and blows out these stereotypes of who is Superman, who is Batman, and who is Wonder Woman. I think there's such good material to be mined there.
Because Man-Bat is Batman.
He's a vampire.
Yeah. But it's Kurt...
yes.
Langstrom.
Yep.
And then Big Barda is Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah. Well, she's called Becca, but she's basically Big Barda. Yeah. And she has a love story with Orion. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. And I remember when this movie came out, and maybe the marketing on it was weird, but being like, okay, great. Like, we've seen alternate, you know, we just talked about it with Crisis on Tours. We've seen alternate versions.
Nobody was, I remember that too. Nobody was excited about this movie. Everybody's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then, because Jason and I get around to watching all of the DC animated movies eventually and being so blown away by it. And also, this was the first movie in a long time that returned to that Bruce Timm Justice League animated series house style, which is what brought so many of us to this franchise and to this movement in the first place. And I think that they use that style so well, and it highlights not only what's genius about it aesthetically, but how integral it is to changing and growing the DC animated universe. I think this movie is challenging. I think it's gorgeous. I think it has a lot to say about archetypes and the types of stories that we have. And even though it's a solid Superman story, it's a solid Batman story, it's a solid Wonder Woman story, it's a solid Justice League story, it's also a really interesting analysis of this medium and of our relationship to these heroes. I think it's so much better and so much smarter than it has any like right or reason to be. And I'm sad that more people didn't check it out at the time, that most of us have come to this movie a lot later. But I think it is singular and I think it is special. And I would have been very remiss had I not included it on my list. So Justice League, God and Monsters is my...
It's Gods and Monsters.
Gods and Monsters. It's my number four. And Jason and I do have we have all the action figures. They're cool.
They look cool. I was trying to figure out... what led to the creation of this movie, because this movie really screams like it is a leftover script from Justice League Animated, like, you know, alternate world. I can't find anything.
I couldn't find a lot of production history.
So it just shows that a lot of people are sleeping on this movie. But the one thing I could find, apparently it was supposed to come out a year earlier.
Interesting.
Then Warner Brothers didn't think it was going to work and shelved it.
Interesting. Maybe that speaks to the marketing behind it, which is not a shot at Warner Brothers. Lots of companies do this.
Sure.
Lots of things are marketed strangely. And, hindsight is, of course, always 2020. But yeah, I think this movie, I think it's also special because it keeps getting more relevant the more you think about it and the more times change. And I'm like, that's what art is.
Yeah.
And animated movies are art. Fight me. Don't fight me. I won't answer you. Jason, what is your... Number four.
My number four is a movie that makes us look towards the horizon, towards the new frontier. That's why it's called Justice League, the New Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Jack F. Kennedy, give the end speech for this movie.
What movie is this again?
God Bless America. Justice League, the New Frontier.
This is on my list. It is much higher.
So I have other movies that made more personal and deeper connections to me higher
than
this.
That's fine.
But this movie is amazing. In the 1950s, a new generation of superheroes must join forces with the community's active veterans and a hostile U.S. government to fight a menace to Earth. I'm just going to put this out there. If you haven't read the comic book Justice League New Frontier, actually it's called the DC, the New Frontier, pause this podcast right now, jump out of your car and run to the nearest bookstore, because I guarantee you they have it.
It's been on at least five of our recommended reading lists.
This is one of the greatest DC comic books ever written by the amazing and astounding, written and drawn by the amazing and astounding, sadly no longer with us, Darwin Cook.
It has my single favorite Martian Manhunter sequence of all time. I also recently got to write an article for DCComics.com about how great it was because the book has an anniversary this year.
Oh, very cool. The movie is basically the book. I mean, there are some slight changes.
It's a more condensed.
But yeah. it's pretty much the book.
Yeah.
They don't really change a lot. Again, this is still in that idea that, the adaptations, I talked about. I'm sorry. I was trying to trying to form these words. Because, again, when these started out, they were looked at as adaptations, which is why it drove everybody crazy. We were like, why aren't you making Batman Hush for a very, very long time?
I also think, and I think it'll be evidenced by some of the things later on my list, is the best ones are the adaptations.
Yes, because you have when you have the spine.
When you have in New Frontier, you have such phenomenal source material to begin with.
But the interesting thing is that, the animation really captures Darwin Cook's style.
Yeah.
The score is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really think that the voice cast is near perfection because I think David Boreanaz as Hal Jordan is such great casting because there was years where people were like, he should be live action Hal Jordan. Around Angel, I thought the same thing too.
I really also love this version of Hal Jordan. They do a really good job explaining why Hal is the way he is. And before the Morrison Liam Sharp Green Lantern,
Was great.
It was one of my favorite versions of Hal Jordan, but I think that surpasses.
Well, that's the interesting thing about New Frontier is that you secretly learn that it is a Hal Jordan origin story.
Yeah.
And I can't think of many scenes in comics or in animated movies that beat the confrontation between Hal and that Korean soldier.
Yeah, it's
at
very
the end
sad.
Of the war. You're just like, whoa. But I love this book. I love this movie. This movie is so triumphant.
Mm-hmm.
Like you feel it, and it does feel like you're watching. Because it is, again, it's also an origin for the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a weird Elseworlds origin for the Justice League. And when you feel when the Justice League comes together, you're just like, wow, like, yeah, like that's this movie gives you all the feelings that you want from comic books, from reading Silver Age comic books. This is that movie.
I'm also chiming in because this is my number two.
OK, fine. Go. Yeah.
Because I have a lot to say about New Frontier.
Please do.
I also think New Frontier, and I'm saying this as someone who's not an American citizen, I think this very much sums up why America is great, the great aspects of this country.
I'm glad you say it. You're great. Ashley, John F. Kennedy here.
And thank you, JFK. I appreciate that.
Mr. President, that's Mr. President to you.
Sure. You're going to stay at arm's length at all times. But I also think it does that because it celebrates the comic book medium, even as an animated movie, which is a quintessentially American art form. And it's this weird ephemeral thing. Like, yeah, it ends with the presidential address, but it's more than that.
Would you like to meet Miss Marilyn Monroe? She's right here.
I mean,
I'm turning Australian.
Really.
Are you hearing this?
Yeah. Because you're going pretty nasally. You're like one step away from being Dick Van Dyke in Mary
Poppins. I just want to point out to everybody on all of our listeners right now. Did you ever expect that John F. Kennedy would be a guest on the show?
Maybe he'll come back for the Christmas episode. I was going to say something else about New Frontier. Oh,
yes. I'm sorry.
I think one of the reasons you talked about how Darwin Cook's like art style really works in the movies. Darwin Cook is also someone who's been very integral to the development of DC animation, even outside of the movie.
Do you know how?
He did the title sequence for Batman Beyond.
He did. Yeah. Yes, he did.
I almost said Batman Begins.
It's all him. He animated it. It's all him. And that's why that title sequence is amazing. It's so good. I've never skipped that title sequence. And
you have a poster of it on the wall.
Well, it's not, it's sort
inspired
of.
Inspired.
I have a poster of Batman Beyond on the wall. But that title sequence is so good. Yes, Darwin Cook, he's an animator.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I don't necessarily.
He did help out with this movie, too.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what he did on this movie besides obviously creating the source material and adapting the script. But you can definitely see his hand there. And I think it is only as a positive force behind it. It's in no way detrimental. And I think the movie succeeds because of his force as a creator as well.
He co-wrote the script.
There you go. I also love, one of my favorite things about New Frontier is that Wonder Woman is tall. She is as tall as Superman. And that's something I think
she's taller.
Well, she's taller because she has the poofy golden age hair.
Yeah, but she's voiced by Lucy Lawless.
Yes, who should 1,000% be playing in Amazon.
If you've never seen New Frontier, it's really good. I have a personal story about New Frontier.
Please.
So I'm going to admit to something, and I don't think it's something that anybody should do. But I will just say, so when this movie came out in 2008, I was living in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually in my last year of college.
Mm-hmm.
So the market, the DVD market, because it would have been DVDs at the time, of Tulsa, Oklahoma was lacking, to say the best.
Mm-hmm.
And these movies, because, you know, they're animated and they didn't make as many copies of this as they did.
They weren't super mainstream.
No. They were hard to find sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, the week it came out, could not find it in Tulsa. Could not find it.
Mm-hmm.
So I admit that I went onto the internet and found a torrented version of this.
Ah.
Because I wanted to watch it mm-hmm. the day it came out. And I could not, and I remember going to like three different Best Buys, could not find it.
Now, to be fair, Jason has bought this twice since then.
Yeah, I own two copies of it.
So.
Yeah.
He's paid his dues.
I've made up for it. Okay. But I watched this movie, this torrented movie with my friend, Wendell, and most of my friends, I know he listens to Geek History Lesson. We talked about him on the podcast before. My very good friend, Jeremy Skinner.
Hi, Jeremy.
Yes, hello, Jeremy. And
hi, Flash.
We watched Justice League: The New Frontier, this torrented version.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fun fact: I don't know why this torrented version. All the Batman scenes were in black and white.
Great.
So,
I know why. That was a screener copy.
Okay, so
screeners, they'll do that.
So
before they learned how to watermark things.
So when Batman first shows up in the church.
That's kind of cool, though.
When Martian Manhunter like opens the doors, it goes black and white. And then when Superman comes to the Batcave and meets Robin, it goes black and white. And it was only for the Batman scenes. And so I remember being like, oh, that's an interesting stylistic choice. So when I bought this on Blu-ray later and I watched it and it was in color, I was like, what? I was like, what? Like, I actually thought like it was an artistic choice. I was like, oh, that's weird that they're showing Batman in black and white. Huh.
That's so funny.
I've never forgotten that. And and I will say this because I watched that torrented version a lot.
Yeah.
Because I loved that movie so much. I think I prefer the black and white version better. Wow. I think it's more artistic.
Interesting.
So there you go.
So funny.
I do not recommend torrenting. Please don't torrent. People make their livelihoods off these movies, and every dollar actually does count.
Yeah. I love it when you go look at torrent or free sites, and people are like, why is this thing being canceled? This TV show, comic book series, insert anything here. And it's like, well, now
you know. But no, I bought a DVD and a Blu-ray version of that movie since. So I've paid my due for that movie.
Yeah. And, so. Also the absolute comic version. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ghost of Darwin Cook, don't haunt us, please.
Yes. Cool. So my number four and your number two. But Ashley, we're going to come right back to you.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number three?
My number three is a movie and a comic book series that I was reticent to engage with. And then Jason said, you have to. So I did. And it is All-Star Superman from 2011.
Ashley.
Jason.
My number three is All-Star Superman.
Oh, man. Good.
That's
I thought
amazing.
Yours might have been higher.
Before we go any further, I have a story that I can tell about this one, too. I have personal connections to most of these movies.
Great.
But I just want to couch. Did you know All-Star Superman, the animated version, written by Dwayne McDuffie?
I did
the great Dwayne McDuffie. Okay, but continue. Do you have the synopsis for this movie?
Fueled by hatred and jealousy,
wow.
Lex Luthor masterminds an elaborate plot to kill the Man of Steel. And it works. Poisoned by solar radiation, Superman is dying. With weeks to live, he fulfills his life's dreams, especially revealing his true identity to Lois Lane. Until Luthor proclaims his ultimate plan to control the world with no alien hero to stop him. Powers fading, Superman engages in a spectacular deadly battle with Luthor that could only trigger the end of the Earth's greatest protector. This startling and gripping DC Universe animated original movie stars the voice talents of James Denton, Anthony LaPaglia, Christina Hendricks, and Ed Asner.
Yep.
Thanks, Amazon, for that lengthy
Mm-hmm.
Synopsis.
And then
based on
Alex Denisov is the weird
Alexei.
Alexei, excuse me, is the Professor Quantum guy.
Yes.
Why did you put this as number three?
Because I really like All-Star Superman.
Yeah, it's great.
And because, and I know you are going to find this sacrilegious. I like the art adaptation here better than the comic book art.
Eh, it's fine. It's a little bit smoother.
It is. Frank Quitely sometimes for me is a little...
He draws ugly people.
A little sketchier.
They're beautiful ugly people, but they're ugly.
I like him better on Batman than on a Superman.
Oh, interesting. Book, okay.
Personally. Based on the incredible Frank Quitely, Grant Morrison series. And I think it really actually lends itself to a movie. Now, the movie is a compressed version of the comic book because the comic book is the labors of Hercules. It deals a lot more with mythology and it just has more time to sit in that than the movie does.
The comic book is more chapters.
Yes.
Yes.
But I think the ending where Superman goes to live in the sun and Lois looks up at him, I actually think works better as a movie. Like to see it played out like that, I found more impactful than reading the comic. In the comic, I found the sixth chapter, the Pa Kent death, more impactful when you could sort of sit in it and like feel his grief.
They do a slight wink to that.
They absolutely do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think this movie is great because it not only adapts the story well, but it transcends and becomes something special on its own. And that is where the adaptive stories and the adapted movies really, really shine is when they can elevate something that maybe you overlooked in the comic book or they can give it, they can breathe new life into it. And I was surprised because I really did like the series when you encouraged me to read it, that the movie could, it doesn't transcend it because I don't necessarily think one of them is better than the other when you step back and look at them.
I think they're both equally good.
But I was surprised that it had something different to say. And I think it's a bold move that DC/Warner decided to adapt All-Star Superman because it's difficult and it's complicated and it's deep, and some of the best DC original animated movies are big fun action sequences.
Punching things.
Which is great, and I love those. And this is not. This is like a very reflective character study, kind of like what you addressed earlier. So I really admire the fact that they dared to adapt this at all. I think the same thing, even though I do not like the property, about The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight movie.
Returns?
Yes, The Dark Knight Returns.
I can never remember which one is Returns and which one is Rises, because I don't like either of them. But that, again, that's a big, complicated, intellectual story, and the adaptation's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this was 2011. This was right before the big shift, before DC Animated kind of got their house style and they settled into more original stories.
When they decided to do this continuity.
Yeah, yep. Like they're doing now, and it's a big swing, and I think it's a really good swing.
Oh,
and now
so
I will let you talk about it, because you have probably more insightful things to say. Superman is your dude.
Well, here's the thing. All-Star Superman is the greatest Superman story. I've said that before. And this movie literally could have been a panel for panel recreation of All-Star Superman, and it still would have made it on this list.
Sure.
So the fact
the story's great.
Yeah. And the fact that they tweak things and change things and it's still on here is fantastic. It just goes to the powerful of Dwayne McDuffie. I will say this. This is the only animated movie that's ever made me cry.
Oh, Jason.
The ending of this movie is sad. Now, a lot of that is the writing, but a lot of that is the Christopher Drake score to this movie is astounding. And it's one of the best Superman stories ever. I mean, because this is a death of Superman story. It is. It's about the death of Superman.
Yeah, it's the and last it's, Superman story.
And it's about him saying goodbye to everybody. And this noble idea that he becomes the sun and looks all over all of us is just amazing. And I think the Lex Luthor movie moment at the end of this movie and the end of the comic books, but I think it plays better in the movie where Lex Luthor sees, he has Superman's vision powers and he sees the spaces between the atoms, the thing that connects us all, and he stops being evil. Is just amazing. You want to talk about a character arc?
Yeah.
That is amazing because this whole story starts with Lex Luthor trying to kill Superman. And also the fact that there's this panel, many of you probably have seen it. The first page of All-Star Superman in the comic books is a four-panel reproduction of Superman's origin.
I'll share that on the socials.
It's doomed planet, something scientists, kindly farmers, Superman It's something like that.
Yes.
And they recreate it in the movie, and it's so amazing. That's the thing about this movie, is that the fact that this movie took a comic book that kind of said everything you ever needed about Superman and then found more to say is astounding. I think the scene between Superman and Ma Kent, where she's like, "You're looking a little thin," which is original to the movie. It's not in the comic books, I think is really powerful. But yeah, Superman's goodbye to Lois at the end is just so sad and so amazing. Now, again, the problem with this movie is that it is a little chunked, separated.
Truncated.
It feels like chapters, right?
There's
when the two Kryptonian scientists show up. But that, again, they took 12 comics and that were 12 one and done stories that were sort of connected and shoved them together. And I think it's astounding. I think this movie is so fantastic. I mean, there was no way it was not making my list. This would be like the first. If anybody was like, "Oh, what DC animated movie I should be," I'd be like, "This is it," because this is a home run. The rest of them, I think it depends on like your taste.
This would be the first one you would give someone?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know, man. Also, Superman, you got to know something about Superman.
Well, if you're coming to me being like, "Oh, yeah, I want to watch the DC animated movies," I think you know something about Superman.
Okay.
But I think this is such a like different, it makes you look at Superman in a different way. Mm-hmm. Whereas, as you just said, like we talked about before, a grand majority of these are just punch 'em ups. Mm-hmm. They're an hour action battle. And those are the ones I would never give somebody. Because if you want somebody to like maybe try to watch all of these, you got to give them the good one, like a strong one out the gate. That's why New Frontier would be another one I'd give people.
I would give people, New Frontier would be like my recommended.
I mean, most of these that
jumping
we've.
Jumping on point.
Most of these we've said so far would be ones I would give.
Not Gods and Monsters. Gods and Monsters, you got to know a little bit more.
But Crisis on Two Earths, I think, would be a fun one. But All-Star Superman's the one that I think that's gonna really them in, because I don't think there's an animated movie quite like it. And
there's
the Grant Morrissey of it all. Mm-hmm. The Grant Morrison of it. So I have a personal story with this one too.
Okay.
So
you stole it from a Best Buy.
No. I was given a copy of this movie for free. Cool. Actually, a Blu-ray copy of this movie for free.
Ooh.
So in 2011, when this came out, the DC Warner Brothers publicity machine used to do this thing.
I know the story.
They would do screenings in New York and Los Angeles.
Usually at the Paley Center, right?
At the Paley Center, yes. And they would do it for press, and then they would let fans fill in the rest of the theater. It was always a first come, first serve.
Yep.
My second month living in LA, or no, second month or first year, it was like my I was pretty early.
Within your first year.
Within my first year of LA, it was really early. Mm-hmm. Like I had not been here long. I'd been here less than 6 months.
Yeah.
In LA. I saw the notice go out on like Comic Book Resources or some site I was reading, and I applied and I got two tickets. And it was funny because I had hardly any friends out here. I convinced this one guy that barely liked comic books to go, because I don't like doing things I like going with people. I don't like going by myself. So I found this one guy. I went, had a great time. They had a panel afterwards, and it was hosted by this gentleman who has now become a friend of ours. I'm going to mispronounce his last name, Gary Mirenu.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you mispronounced his name.
He's the publicity marketing at DC Animated.
Hi, Gary. You're awesome.
He's great. He's such a great dude. He's usually the dude in the Hawaiian shirt with the goatee that you see hosting the DC Animated panels at San Diego Comic-Con and New York. He's astounding. He's so friendly. And they did this thing where they asked for audience questions, and the best audience questions got a Blu-ray copy of the movie.
A proud tradition that Jason carried on when he was working for DC.
Yes. So I asked a question. I do not remember what my question was, but it was one of the questions picked, and I got a Blu-ray copy. And it was signed, and it was signed by Bruce Timm. It was signed by Dwayne McDuffie. It was signed by a couple other people in the cast. It was really cool. I still have that Blu-ray, and I will never get rid of that Blu-ray. Now, after the thing, the people kind of stand up there, like most panels, and you can kind of go up there and rush the stage and get a picture or whatever. And most people went after Superman because he was a guy that was on Desperate Housewives. And most people went after the woman who voiced Lois because she was another.
Christina Hendricks. Yeah, she was on Firefly and Mad Men.
Yeah, they're all TV actors, right? I went up to Bruce Timm because nobody was talking to Bruce Timm, and I got a picture with Bruce Timm, and I talked to Bruce Timm, and it's great because I've reminded him of that. I've got to talk to him about like 5 or 6 more times. I don't mean the name drop.
But it's just the truth.
It's the truth.
That's your real life.
And I told him this story several times, you know, but he was lovely. And then I got to talk to Dwayne McDuffie. And I talked to Dwayne McDuffie.
So envious.
for about 5 minutes about just hearing everything and adapting. And then we talked about Static and Icon and Milestone, because of course I had to talk to him about that. Now, the reason I bring this up is because Dwayne McDuffie died less than 2 weeks after the screening.
Yeah, he has since passed.
And the reason why I bring this up as well is because that DVD, the signed Blu-ray, they wouldn't let me leave with it because the movie hadn't come out yet. So they were like, give us your address.
Oh, and we'll mail it
to it. I got it in the mail the day it was announced he died.
Oh, what a nice bit of synchronicity.
Yeah. So I have a signed Blu-ray of All-Star Superman signed by Dwayne McDuffie. I have a picture with Dwayne McDuffie as well. If you remind me, Ashley,
I'll make a note. We'll try to dig it out.
I should give it to you.
Share it.
I look terrible in the poster or in the picture.
Put a smiley face over your face.
Yes. but I have a picture with Dwayne McDuffie. It was great. I'm so, I feel honored that I got to meet him because he was lovely. I think I also talked to him about Damage Control as well. Like, I just kind of went through his career because I was so excited to meet him.
Yeah.
Because he's a genius writer.
Yeah. If you are unfamiliar with Dwayne McDuffie, give him a Google.
Mm-hmm.
Give him a Google. He's got some awards named after him now.
Oh,
he's
man.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah. He's an incredible guy. So I have a personal connection to All-Star Superman. But the other thing about it is that I'm so happy that it's such an astounding movie.
Yes.
It's so good. All right. Let's move into number two.
My number two is New Frontier.
Yay!
Watch New Frontier.
Cool.
Jason, what is your number two?
my number two.
I swear to God, if it's my number one, I'm going to hit you.
I guarantee it's going to be your number one. my number two is a movie that they retitled from the original comic story. See, the original comic story was called Under the Hood.
I hate you so much.
And the Blu-ray, they decided to call it Under the Red Hood, because they decided that the general audiences were stupid. This is Batman Under the Red Hood. That is my number two.
It's my number one. It's my favorite.
I knew it was going to be number one. So feel free to chime in at any point. Do you have the synopsis ready? Do you want to just go ahead and give it?
Batman faces his ultimate challenge as the mysterious Red Hood takes Gotham City by firestorm. One part vigilante, one part criminal kingpin, Red Hood begins cleaning up Gotham with the efficiency of Batman, but without following the same ethical code. Killing is an option. And when the Joker falls in the balance between the two, that's not a real sentence, hard truths are revealed and old wounds are reopened.
I'm just going to call shenanigans on the person that wrote that synopsis, because putting, I think, Firestorm, DC character, into your...
Gary, who wrote the synopsis?
Synopsis of DC characters? Bad choice.
Yeah.
Because it makes you be like, Firestorm's in this movie?
He's not.
He's not in this movie. Ashley, why is it your number? Would you rather me talk first or would you talk first?
You ask me a question, I'll answer your question.
Why is it your number one? Yeah.
It's got such good Robin moments in it. The DC animated movies, for all of the things that we love about them, don't do a lot of service to sidekicks. They tend to focus around the Justice League characters.
Yes.
I was so excited when this was announced. I love Under the Hood. In our Jason Todd episode, I talked a lot about the Jason Todd rebirth storylines, the ones that we really, really like, even the one where he sleeps with Talia al Ghul, which is questionable. But
it's a fun miniseries, though.
It is. Look, everything except for that moment is like truly perfect. And we also talked about it maybe 3 days ago. But I actually think Under the Red Hood is a more accessible version of that story. I think they do a better job condensing some of the history. I love the portrayal of Nightwing. I don't necessarily love Neil Patrick Harris as Nightwing, but I like seeing how capable he is. And I really like the scenes like when he's fighting Amazo with Batman at the beginning. And anytime Batman gets to examine his relationships with his sidekicks, I always find thought-provoking. I always find dynamic. I loved it about Batman the Animated Series. And this takes those moments, but it makes it a little more mature and a little darker. This came out in 2010, which was the year I moved to Los Angeles. I moved to a new country. I moved to a new school. It was really hard, so I watched this movie a lot.
So you have a personal connection to this movie.
I do, yeah. Like,
it's a good movie, man.
It means a lot, and it very much encapsulates like that point in time for me and like the person that I was.
Can I give you a fun fact?
Please do.
Do you know who wrote this movie?
No.
The screenplay for this movie, and that's why I think this movie is so good, and that's there's a reason why I think this movie is so impressive. This screenplay is written by Judd Winnick.
I did know that.
Who also wrote the original Under the Red Hood comic book storyline. Yes. That was his idea to bring Jason Todd back.
This also has some pretty diverging casting, voice casting in it. Bruce Greenwood is Batman.
Great.
I love him. He should be animated.
And he is in Young Justice.
He's so good. He's so good. Yeah. Nice Canadian.
Also.
And then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bender.
John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio is Joker. The Joker. And he's really frightening. And
yeah, he's different.
He's really scary. And the way they animate the Joker is very weird in this movie. And he doesn't look like this in any other movie. And I think this version of this story does a great job at reminding you why he's scary. My only argument with this is they give Jason Todd Tim Drake's costume in his death sequence at the beginning, and it makes me mad.
I'm fine with it. They just, you know, that's the downside is that since Tim Drake has the best Robin costume,
he's got two of the best Robin costumes.
Now they've
and also two of the
they
worst
have to
Robin
retcon
costumes.
It because we won't buy pixie boots and Speedo. Interesting fun fact about this: if you look at the character designs in Under the Red Hood, mm-hmm. these are the character designs that inspired character designer Phil Barassa to draw Young Justice. If you mm-hmm. look at Young Justice and you look at this movie,
especially the Robin stuff
and Batman, they look the same. They're very similar. Like you can tell.
You can talk about Under the Red Hood now.
Under the Red Hood is just one of those stories in the comic books that when you hear about it, you automatically are like, this will never work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's doing one of the two things. There was a line in comic books for a very long time where it was like, there's two things you never do. You don't bring back Bucky and you don't bring back Jason Todd. And they're both back now.
Yeah.
And now it makes me, you know, again, that makes me why I'm always like, well, maybe Uncle Ben's coming back. I don't know, man.
He's back in Spider-Gwen. He never died.
And he came back a couple of times. So the fact that they brought him back, they did the thing that people were like, you can never bring Jason Todd back because his death is so impactful.
Also because people hated him.
Yes. But the fact that they brought him back and it is such an astounding
mm-hmm.
story. And the fact that it is such an became an astounding character. And I'll be honest with you, one of the reasons why I like this movie so much is that it changes one of the problems I had with the comic book series is that the comic book series made it the way he gets resurrected is a little bit more complicated than throwing in a Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
It has to do with Infinite Crisis shenanigans, which I don't even want to go into because they're goofy.
Which is why now they've basically condensed it to we hucked him in a Lazarus pit.
Well, they stole it from this movie. They basically were just like, no, the movie did it right. Yeah, we put him in a Lazarus pit.
Also like I like the supernatural boy who's like a 45-year-old man.
Jensen Ackles.
Who does the voice of Jason Todd.
It's good.
And I think he could make a good live action.
He could do a great
live
action.
He would have been a good live action
Jason Todd. This movie, again, it's an adaptation,
mm-hmm.
but it does what adaptations do so good, where just like you focus in on what really matters in that story, and it makes it really, really work. Like Nightwing really works in this movie. I know like Tim Drake is in the comics and they decided to cut him out because they were like, there are too many Robins.
I know, which bums me out as a Tim Drake stan, but it actually really works for the movie.
It focuses the movie because it makes it seem like Batman after Jason Todd was like, no more Robins.
And I actually think the scene where Red Hood confronts Batman and he's like, you let me die, and he's trying to get him to kill the Joker and Batman won't do it. And then Jason is like, well, you've proved to me who matters more. Like, oh, it gets me right in my feelings.
I think that this movie has the greatest ending scene of all of the DC Universe original movies.
Interesting.
Yes. And again, we already said full spoilers.
Yeah. This movie's almost a decade old, so
the last scene being the first night of Jason Todd
he's
being
smiling,
Robin.
And he's happy. Well, I'm going to cry.
And he does the somersault of the bat, and he's in his little speedy costume with his pixie boots, and he's like, this is going to be fun. Credits. And you're just like, oh my God. It's like gut punch.
I'm crying.
Yeah. That to me, I was like, especially since we saw everything, all the hell
mm-hmm.
he went through.
Mm-hmm.
Like we see and I think it's genius because I don't know if many people know this. Again, the movie begins where we see Jason Todd die.
Yeah. And you don't see it. You see it in shadow, but the Joker beats him with a crowbar.
So again, it's interesting to start a movie with the end of his Robin career and then end the movie with the beginning of his Robin career. I think that's so genius.
I love it too because it reminds you that Jason was that he was Robin. He yep. was that innocent little boy who
what
just wanted
to
do good. Yeah. And like that's what makes it so tragic. And that's what's lost on Jason Todd in the modern comics. Please bring it back. This movie is so good. Yeah, it made me cry talking about it. So that's why it's my number one. So Jason, I think we finally come to the moment.
I need you to vamp for a couple seconds because I'm trying to prepare a bit and I wasn't quite ready.
I'm sorry. I'll just talk more about how Jason Todd makes me cry. I also think Alfred gets a couple really nice moments in this movie. And it's a great movie to show people when they think that Robin is silly or when the only version of Batman that they've only seen is the early 90s stuff, because it might shock most people who listen to this podcast, but not everyone follows up on all the Batman movies. This is a great way to prove to people how the story and the characters mature. So
right,
now, Jason, for reals,
I'm ready.
What is your number one?
When I thought about this list, there was a time where I considered Under the Red Hood at number one. I was a time where I considered New Frontier as number one. I was a time I considered as All-Star Superman as number one. But when I objectively thought about the movie that truly knocked my socks off because it was something that I never thought could be adapted, it of course came down to a movie where there is a line where Peter Weller says, "You don't get it, boy. This is a mud hole. This isn't a mud hole. It's an operating table. And I'm the surgeon." Crack.
I knew this was going to be your number
It's The Dark Knight Returns. And I consider them as one movie. I know they released them as part one and part two. They also did a Blu-ray later where they stitched it together. I'm conflicted. Because I actually think they did a really good job of where they split it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really almost think part one's a little bit stronger than part two.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find it being, it's really interesting to see it all together. Like, I think it works better all together. But like, well, I remember when I saw part one and then when they hit those credits. And again, Christopher Drake is probably the unsung hero of all these movies because his Dark Knight Returns score is so amazing. I still remember there's a scene where he's broken, he's battered in Dark Knight Returns part one. He goes out to the balcony and like, and then like the lightning flashes on his face and then it goes, dur, 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 and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Not that this podcast or this person needs any more promotion, but Kevin Smith Fatman on Batman, he actually has a really great interview with Christopher Drake that you guys, if you scroll way back to when it was an interview podcast, you can hear a lot about how he composes DC scores.
Yes. So in case you don't know what The Dark Knight Returns is, Batman has not been seen for 10 years. A new breed of criminal ravages Gotham City, forcing 55-year-old Bruce Wayne back into the cape and cowl. But does he still have what it takes to fight crime in a new era? Of course, this is based on the luminary and much lauded and award-winning comic book, The Dark Knight Returns, written by Frank Miller. The actual title of this animated movie is Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, which I think they did that because they didn't want to get confused with The Dark Knight Rises and The Dark Knight.
Which is fair.
Which is stolen from Frank Miller. But, God, this to me is like Watchmen. The Dark Knight Returns is a comic book like Watchmen where there's no way to adapt it. And I thought that for years. I was like, there's no way. We'll never see a live action thing. We'll never see. And interesting, when they did the release of this, and I heard for a long time that this was like Bruce Timm's kind of dream adaptation. Like he wanted to adapt this one, but they wouldn't let him do it. And it's,
I mean, I get it.
They wouldn't let him do it. And he finally convinced them. This actually is Bruce. So Bruce Timm was the executive producer of like all of these movies. He was the spearhead of all these movies. This was his finale. So there is a break after this movie. After The Dark Knight Returns, part one and part two, this is where they start the break where they change the animation style and they have the same animation style for all the movies going forward. And they have a continuity, a sort of loose continuity in them where they're all sort of connected, even though they're adaptations. And where Jason O'Mara is Batman in every movie now. Now, Bruce Timm has come back and he has produced, like he produced Justice League Gods and Monsters during that period.
Yes, he did.
And he produced another one very recently that I can't remember, but it doesn't matter. But this was his finale as the Jim Krieg has taken over this role from Jim Krieg of the awesome Justice League action series. So but this is Bruce Timm's swan song. And I think you can tell watching the energy in this movie, because the art direction of this movie,
it's pretty.
This is a beautiful animated movie. And I will say this, the one downside about the DC Universe animated movies is that sometimes they wear their budget on their sleeve.
Yes. I would also say that with Marvel direct animated movies.
Sure.
It happens. Yeah.
I think this is the one that doesn't wear it. I think this one looks like this is
I
one.
I would say New Frontier is another one that.
I agree with that.
Doesn't look.
Yeah.
I mean, for lack of a better word, cheap.
Yes. Now, some of the newer ones, they do look pretty cheap. I think Dark Knight Returns, you can tell the money they spent on this one.
Yeah.
And I think this is one that you could have released in theaters, and it would have looked gorgeous. Peter Weller, in a million years, would have never been my choice for Batman.
An inspired choice, though.
Oh, he kills it. Mm-hmm. And then another person, Michael Emerson from Lost in Person of Interest as the Joker, is so good in this movie.
Oh, I'll say this right here and right now, and people can come and fight me on the internet about it. You can be excited about Joaquin Phoenix live action Joker, and that's cute. I will wait for a Michael Emerson live action Joker.
Oh,
weird. He would be so good.
He'd be a weird looking Joker.
But you want him to be weird looking.
Yeah, yeah, he'd be a weird looking Joker.
The highest compliment that I can pay this movie is that I don't like the source material. It's just not to my taste.
But you like this movie.
But I think this movie makes it more accessible and more digestible and easy to understand. Like, I understand now why this means as much as it does to people.
Yeah.
From having seen the movie.
Yeah. And I think that is the key to a great adaptation.
Yeah.
I think it when it takes the source material and makes it better. And I agree with you. I love the Dark Knight Returns book. I do think it is like the greatest Batman story ever written. And weirdly, I kind of almost think the movie is a little bit better.
There's not 185 panels of people at a news desk.
Well, you know, I don't know. I just think it nails it. And I think Peter Weller, and again, the music, Christopher Drake's music is amazing.
I mean, Admiral Robocop is really good in it.
Yeah, we like to call him Admiral Robocop because he was the villain in Star Trek and Darkness. But God, this movie, again, I will never in my entire life. Because I was very nervous about this movie. I was so nervous about this movie. And we knew each other when this movie came out.
Yep.
I don't know if you watched part one with me or not.
I didn't. I watched them all together.
One together. Okay. Because this is another one. I own all the versions of this movie.
Yes. I think several copies of it.
Yeah. I own part one. I own part two. I own the collected together one. And then I own I've bought like every copy of this movie. But this is one that the day it came out, I went to Best Buy. I bought this movie. I'm going to watch it that night because I was so excited. And I was like also very nervous about it. And I still remember, again, that shot on the balcony, credits. And like being like, oh, my God. And just being like, I literally was like. Like slow clap. They did it. I could not believe they did it. And they did it with such emotion, such gravitas. They understood what Frank Miller was doing and they translated it so strongly. Like, to me, there's no. And I also kind of think that, you know, we have to forget it. I mentioned it before. Bruce Timm is the whole reason why we have this line of movies.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Timm.
He's also, you know, him and Paul Dini are the reason that we have any good DC cartoons.
And don't forget Alan Burnett. He's the unforgotten third member of that trio.
Yes.
He has become the Pete Best, but he is just as important. And I would argue that Dwayne McDuffie is the fourth of that quattro.
So there's our Beatles.
So there are DC animated Beatles.
Yeah.
Bruce Timm is the reason why we have this line of movies. Like he spearheaded every one of them. He chose every one of them. If you ever get a chance to meet him at a convention, talk to him about why he chose certain ones. Like when I got to meet him this for the second time, I asked him why. I was like, why no Kingdom Come? And I love his thinking where he said, well, if we can't make it look exactly like Alex Ross, why would we even bother?
Yes. And you're kind of like, well, fair.
Well, yeah, as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, that makes sense.
And look, there's any myriad of reasons why things are chosen or not chosen, but that's a very satisfying answer in a way that, like, I pitched it and the executives told me no, because you're like, what do I do with that? You know what I mean?
Yes. So to me, I look at the Dark Knight Returns animated movie, and the reason why it's my number one is because it is such his home run, and he knocks it so far out of the park that it circled the earth, came back around, and knocked us all in the back of the head. That's how far this ball went. And if you've not seen this movie, even if you don't like the comic book, and Ashley just gave that thing, if you don't like the comic book, I would highly recommend watching this. I'm trying to bring up this Dark Knight Returns theme because I just keep doing it. It's going to be hard to...
Hard to find it?
It's hard to find it without giving it away.
Yes. Well, that's also the thing, because a lot of the animated scores are not as easily accessible as some of the live action
movies. Ashley, why don't we move... Those are our lists.
Yeah.
I think our list is great. Mm-hmm. We highly recommend. Ashley, why don't you take us into the...
Honor roll?
No, the recommended reading, which of course will be, and explain what they will be for this time, and maybe hopefully I can find it by that time.
So if you go to...
A lot of vamping for you in this episode, I apologize.
That's okay. If you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, you can find a whole bunch of stuff if you want to engage with anything that we talked about here today, and including for all of our episodes in the past. And we're going to have everything that we've recommended. And also the Gods and Monsters miniseries will all be up there so that you can purchase them in your preferred media format. A little bit of support comes back our way and allows us to do more awesome list episodes and spend more time Googling for music.
You can hear
long
my music, yeah.
Enough.
maybe. Hold on. All right. So this is going to be, I might get it wrong. There's a title track, because they released the soundtrack to this for the entire thing, and it's called A Good Life, Good Enough /End Titles.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of like the last scene plus the end credits. What I'm looking for is the moment where it blares up into the end credits. So I apologize. We might have a couple false starts here.
It's going to be great.
Hold on. Here we go. Here it is. Christopher Drake, Amazing Music from Batman: The Dark Knight Returns. That's not it.
This is going well.
That's not it either. Oh, there it is.
Just blew everyone's ears out.
All right, hold on. So the final scene.
Yeah. I'll link to the score in the recommended reading as well.
I know that's through my phone. I apologize. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough production thing to bring in a piece of music because we're terrible. But
if you want to sponsor us and send us a soundboard, let us know.
We're that crescendo comes up as the credits.
Yeah.
And that's the moment. We're like, wah! So, I just remember that. All right, let's move into the last section of our podcast, the honor roll. Ashley, this is where people go to Apple Podcasts. They leave us a 5-star review. Whatever they write, we read it on the podcast because they're helping us in the Apple algorithm and letting new listeners find us, which we really appreciate. And if you want to do that, you should go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Ashley, Genius. Who joins the honor roll this week?
Joining us today is Srasano, who says, guys, I think I found your cosmic reason for being here.
What?
This podcast is awesome! All in caps. The deep dives into characters and their origins is like the perfect combination of a book report and a Saturday morning cartoon. I love that. That's so sweet.
We need to have that on a t-shirt.
I just found this podcast this afternoon, and I've already listened to both episodes about Cable and Deadpool, and have every intention of listening to everything else you guys have to offer. P.S. That Jonathan London guy was awesome. Props to him for admitting he liked the Green Lantern movie over the internet, where it will be remembered forever.
Jonathan London is...
I clipped that out and sent it to him.
Oh, did you? That's very funny. What did he have a response?
He sent me some thumbs up backs. So,
all right, cool.
Thank you, Srasano.
Jonathan is a favorite guest of ours. Yes.
If you've gone back and listened, he's been on a number of episodes. We love him very much.
And I'm certain he'll be on many future ones.
Yes. Also joining Srasano is Mr. Ronzino, who says, finally, school is cool. Dude, school is always cool. This is a top-notch podcast. Great chemistry between the hosts. I've learned more about the characters that I have in my 30 years of collecting comics. A++.
Nice.
Very sweet. So, Mr. Ronzino and Srasano, welcome to the Teacher's Lounge. Jason, what's going on in here today?
Well, there's a flyer up on the board for flute lessons by Professor Drake.
Oh, Professor Drake, yes, our resident music teacher.
Yes, we shelled out the money because everybody in the teacher's lounge was tired of me playing this clip for them. And I was like, hey, listen to this. Isn't this great?
Does the Mind University, do we have a band? Do we have like a concert band?
Yes.
A symphonic band?
We only do superhero music.
Well, I mean, of course.
Or nerd music.
Yeah.
So Christopher Drake's going to teach you how to play that on a flute.
Great.
And you can sign up today.
Yeah.
It's in the corner of the teacher's lounge. So welcome to the honor roll, gentlemen. Thank you so much for leaving a 5-star review. We're out there, guys. For the rest of the year, we really want to do this thing that if you enjoy Geek History Lesson, please tell a friend about it. Tell a friend or family member, a dog that you think might enjoy the podcast. Tell them about it. Tell them that you should go listen to it. Suggest an episode to them. We're still in the search for a hashtag for this because we're going to turn it into a contest of some type. But we're going to figure it out soon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's going to be. But please do that. Help us spread the word. We want to get more students in the Mind University because we think you guys are a cool group of super friends. And we want more. We want more super friends.
Yeah.
Because we're needy.
That's right.
All right, cool.
We need more people to watch DC animated movies with.
Oh, man. I tell you, going back to that All-Star Superman, it was hell trying to find people to go with me. Because, again, Ashley knows this is about me. I don't like doing things alone. I like shared experiences.
Yeah.
So
I don't care about people. I'll go alone.
Ashley will always go alone. I will always go with somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know,
That's why we're a good team. That's why we compliment each other. We're opposites.
Yeah. But it's luckily...
You are the Superman to my Batman.
Yes. Luckily, I have a lot of friends that would go for me for All-Star Superman now, and I really appreciate that. Especially lots of all of you listening, all you super friends out there. Don't forget that you can subscribe and download this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, all kinds of places. Please give us ratings and likes and all those love over there. Don't forget also, we also have a Patreon. If you like the content you hear here and you'd like to support us over there, come join the Hall of Justice. Be a super friend on our Patreon at patreon.com/Jawin, JAWIIN. You get lots of exclusive podcasts, including Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures. I think for that, that's where we get more personal. We have an episode coming up where Ashley and I go through our zodiac signs.
Oh, I did our birth charts, which is a very complicated exploration of our zodiac.
It gets goofy real fast.
It's real good.
It gets real, real goofy. But also, we have Geek History Lesson Extra, where we always take the topic that we talk about on Geek History Lesson, and we talk about it a little bit more. This week, we're going to go through the entire list of the DC Universe original animated movies and give it a see it or skip it. It's a black and white.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting because I think we're going to give a see it to a lot of movies that probably aren't that great, but we're going to be like, yeah, it's worth watching.
We'll see.
Okay. But go check that out over at patreon.com/Jawin. We appreciate all the patrons over there. They're amazing people, and it's an astounding group at the Hall of Justice. So please come join, and you guys help keep the lights on here at the Mind University. Don't forget to follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson, and on Instagram at that same thing. Ashley shares a lot of pictures of her with Kermit and cats. You can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, JAWIIN, and on Instagram at the same thing. I'm not a good Instagrammer anymore because I work in an office and, you know, just office walls, but I do tweet some pretty funny comic book stuff, so you should come over and follow me over there. Ashley, hashtag stick around the last section of our podcast where we see if everybody stuck through the plugs. By the way, if you listen, you stick around all the way to the end, shoot us a tweet at GHL Podcast, hashtag stick around. We'll retweet some of them.
Heck yeah.
Tell us what you like about it. This one's a good one. I want to talk about, Ashley, are there two or three movies that almost made it into your list? This is what I want to do, the also rounds. Like, is there any movie where you're like, I don't know, like maybe, or because for me, that movie was Gods and Monsters.
Interesting.
That was the movie where I was like, I don't know, I like it, but
I'm looking
and
at
Wonder Woman was the other one too.
List. Justice League Dark almost made it into my list.
Oh, interesting.
I really liked Justice League Dark.
We went to the premiere of that, didn't we?
Yes, we did. And we interviewed Matt Ryan Constantine himself, and I think we put it on this podcast.
You should, it is, yes, it was.
I will find that and I will share.
You should share the picture on Geekish Lesson of us talking about Ryan.
Red Sun almost made it on my list, but then I remembered it hadn't come out yet.
It hasn't come out yet. Doesn't come out next year.
I was like, cool, that'll come out next year.
I
always recommend Red Sun, so I saw, you know, you pull up the list.
I was just about to ask you if you had a torrented copy where every time Batman shows up, it goes black and white.
And then I realized that when I saw Red Sun, what I actually thought of was Reign of the Superman, which I thought was a good one.
I'll tell you what, one of my favorite experiences, one of my favorite experiences recently was we went to see The Death of Superman, Reign of Superman together when they did it in Fandango. I had a great time. Death of Superman is also written by Peter Tomasi, who wrote Superman and did a great run on Jonathan Kent, which was great.
And who we like.
Who we like
much.
A lot. Any other movies?
No.
All right.
For me, honestly, like, I made my list and I changed nothing. Like, I knew immediately what was going to be on my list.
I knew basically what was going
to
be on.
And you'll be able to see when you listen to Geek is Just an Extra. I like a lot of these movies, but to me, the ones that transcend they're obvious which ones they are. And that's that.
All right.
Yeah. Cool.
Was this a good episode, Ashley? What do you think?
I give it like a solid 8 out of 10. That was pretty good.
Okay.
What are you furiously Googling?
It's a lot of vamping for me.
It's a lot of vamping for
the internet has not been my friend. Has not been my friend today.
Maybe intern Brago is chewing on the cord.
Oh, probably the internet cord.
Yeah.
This is not working out well. This is not working out well for me. Well, this joke's not going to work. Okay, cool. this has been Geek History Lesson. I have been Jason New Frontier Inman.
I have been Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Don't forget to always eat your clam chowder. Class is dismissed.